Yeah.
Right. You want people to know what you've been up to. So you got to, you know, I think you got to surround yourself with people who can teach you. And then you've got to like continuously surround yourself with people who can observe what you're doing.
Welcome to the MediaCorp Minute Podcast. My name is Josh Langmaid. I own MediaCorp here in town. We are a video production agency. Today I'm joined by Jeff Brown. Jeff is the co-founder and partner at North Rock Commercial Real Estate Development, Brokerage, and Management Company. Great having you on today, Jeff.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Absolutely. I was trying to think back to the first time that we met, and I think it was actually Drew Fleming told me to reach out to you, and I had just had him on the podcast. But, you know, I'd built a relationship up with him, and I'm like, Drew, who in town is just like, who's doing stuff? Like, who do I got to meet and like talk to? He's like, I got a guy. He's like, Jeff Brown. Yeah. I'm like, all right. And I don't know. Like, I think it was that one day I came up to your office.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to just chat and just kind of get to know each other. And I think we ended up figuring out we wanted to do a video project together.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my recollection of kind of coming across and paths with you was kind of serendipitous. Like, I was really impressed with how Drew was marketing his business. You know, in a short period of time, he went from being a brand new company to having a lot of exposure, at least as far as I could tell.
Right.
So I talked, you know, Drew's been a good friend of mine since we were little kids. We grew up playing hockey together, and I talked to him about some of the things he had done, and video was one of them. And so I think around the same time as you reached out to me, it was already something we were thinking about. Yeah. So it just, again, that, you know, we just kind of got brought together by a common force. But yeah, we met at my conference room and might have taken a couple weeks to put it together.
Yeah.
Exactly what we wanted to do. But
it was funny. We started, we were just chatting away, and then we started pulling people into the conference room, because I remember Paul came in and then AJ came in, and we're all sitting there and throwing out ideas and stuff like that. And like, yeah, I think this is something we want to do.
Yeah. And, you know, from time to time in our office, we'll have those sort of informal meetings where you really are just kind of throwing stuff up against the wall, trying to get to something that sounds right. You know, you got to kind of roll through a few different ideas before you start moving in a direction that actually makes sense. But no, it was great working with your team on that project. And I think it, you know, it was not only effective, but it was fun.
Yeah. So that's what we want it to be, enjoyable. And then obviously have a video that works for you.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So before we kind of get into things, I want you to just kind of touch on, what is North Rock Real Estate?
So North Rock Real Estate is a commercial real estate company. That's probably the simplest way to think about it. We do three primary types of business in that world. Development, you know, building buildings.
Yep.
Brokerage, buying and selling or leasing on behalf of people. And then we do property management. Mm-hmm. And so you know, all in the sphere of commercial real estate. You know, commercial real estate's got a lot of asset classes inside it. So we're in the hotel business. We do office and retail projects. We've done some market rate housing projects, some senior housing. You know, it's at its core, it kind of goes back to this sort of commercial investment real estate. Yep. If you really break it down, it's a wider sphere of things that we get involved with. You know, we started up in the Twin Cities, and we have an office up there, and we have an office here in Rochester. And,
well, it's kind of one of those things where like commercial real estate, there's so much involved in it, and there's so many different, you know, ways you can go with it. And like, you guys are in hospitality too.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And that was like one of the, you know, one of those things that we talked about, I mean, reasons why we did a video was like, you know, what do people think when they're going like, well, what's North Rock? Like, you know, well, there's a lot to it.
Yeah. I mean, I have conversations, or I'm a part of conversations every once in a while where, you know, some of my best friends in the world are introducing me to a person, and they're like, yeah, Jeff's in he's in real estate, or he's a contractor, he's building, or what do you do, Jeff? You know, and even people who know me as well as anyone have a hard time sort of putting it in one bucket. And really that is kind of indicative to commercial real estate. I mean, again, there's a lot of asset classes and a lot of different directions you can go. You know, some people in bigger markets will specialize in one thing and one thing only. We've chosen to be a little broader and more entrepreneurial. You know, I think really what I do, being, you know, kind of in Rochester, focusing on Rochester projects, is try to just be a market expert.
Right.
And if that means that one day we're doing an office project, well, that's probably because I think it fits the market. Mm-hmm. If the next day we're working on a hospitality or hotel project, well, again, it's kind of maybe more based on the fact that we're sort of experts in this market.
Yeah. And do you look like yourself to put those deals together? Like you're like, okay, like we need a new apartment building, or like we need, you know, this and
yeah.
that. Like, is that you personally? That's kind of like looking at Rochester, like the surrounding areas, going like what do we need? And then how can I like put a deal together?
Yeah. I mean, it can be that simple, where you're sort of entrenched in a day-to-day basis of thinking, you know, what might be next. Right. So, you know, a lot of times at a happy hour, people will like to have that conversation. Hey, I think this would be good in Rochester. Right. Hey, I think that. And it's fun to like brainstorm about what Rochester might need. Right. We're doing that on a daily basis. And so, you know, what I think we're kind of talking about probably predominantly leans towards the development side of our business. Really what that ends up being is, you know, my partners and I discussing something we might have observed, you know, like let's say the city council publishes a report with some housing demographics, or there's, you know, there could be any number of things, but it might catch our eye differently because we're thinking about those.
And just gets a conversation started.
And then you say, well, where might be a good location for it?
Yep.
Well, are there any available sites in that area? You know, what do those sites cost?
Yep. Are you looking at land like every day?
Maybe to some degree, yeah. But
just so you know what's like out there.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, like Rochester is 100 and, you know, I don't know what our population is of the last census, 120 or something, but then with the broader area, like I think people locally think of it as a huge market. If you ask any real estate, commercial real estate expert, even residential real estate experts, I mean, it's funny how quickly the world can kind of shrink and you know what's out there. And then that's sort of our job. You know, we have to be aware of mm-hmm. the pieces of land, who owns them, what their, you know, value might be, so that if there is a, you know, if the light bulb comes on one day and you realize that there's an opportunity in the market to do something, that you sort of know how to execute and get it done. And so we're always sort of, I don't know if we're looking at pieces of land every day, but we're sort of maintaining a really heightened awareness of what's right. in the market, because when you have a great idea or someone comes to you, may not even be our idea. We'll build stuff all the time for business owners, right? Yep. They might come to us and say, hey, this is my business and here are my strategic objectives for the business plan. You know,
and sometimes you got to move quick. So you got
to
know.
You have to move quick. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I mean, and so really that's where a lot of our value comes in, is just being, you know, very tapped in and having a really solid understanding so that in real time we can execute.
Yep.
And that, you know, kind of spreads across all the different asset classes that we work in. But yeah.
No, that's great. So kind of getting into, let's get into the history. I know you were born and raised here in Rochester.
Yep.
Kind of go through like, you know, growing up here in Rochester, you know, I know your dad was in real estate, kind of touch on that. And then, you know, if you ended up going to college and what for.
Sure. Yeah. So born and raised in Rochester. And in fact, like I'm really proud of the fact that, both sets of my grandparents were born here. You know, obviously my parents were born here. My both my parents went to Mayo High School. That's where my wife and I went. So like, you know, on the one hand, there were times in my life where I kind of wanted to distance myself from Rochester and sort of do my own thing. As I've gotten a little bit older and wiser, you know, I've just, this community is so unique and there's so many good things happening here on a daily basis that I'm just proud to have roots here and deep roots. And so, but yeah, I grew up here, went to Mayo High School. I was sort of aware of what my dad was doing during that time. He's kind of a entrepreneur who, like me now, was a commercial broker, commercial developer, and then he was also an investor in some different businesses that are around town. And so it's funny when I talk about like my friends having a hard time describing what I do, I used to have that same issue with my own dad. Yep. You know, he was involved in all these different businesses and real estate deals. And I couldn't really at that age decipher what was what. You know, I would confuse, he would buy or sell a building as a brokerage transaction on behalf of a client. And I would maybe think that he owned it or something, or, you know, and it's just, it's sort of a complicated world. And so at that point, I didn't really know or think too much about what he was doing, but I liked how on any given day he was doing, different things. You know, I could tell at that point, even in high school, that there was a ton of variety and that each day may take on its own new life. You know, and so he was involved or still is involved in daycares and, he was involved in the Rochester Athletic Club and, car washes. I mean, these odd businesses, but then and good businesses. But then on the other hand, he was working with business owners in an even wider range of things. And so I kind of was able to, understand that about his job. I didn't really know exactly what he was doing, but I knew that it was different every day and that it was interesting and that he liked it.
Did he talk to you much about that? Like kind of getting into that kind of thing?
Not really. I mean, he was very open to it, but I remember wanting to, you know, like get jobs when I was a kid just to have a little bit of extra money. And he was very focused on like, no, like, focus on school and playing sports and having fun. Like you're a kid, you'll work plenty. Like,
right.
Just, and so he didn't really get me involved or, you know, there was enough going on that I was able to pay attention and to some degree see what he was doing, but he was more concerned about, you know, like raising me as a kid, yeah, you know, and absolutely. Letting me figure out my own stuff. So there was he was never really trying to draw me in, very supportive in everything I ever did, but it was never because of anything he was doing. So
graduated from Mayo.
Yeah. So graduated from Mayo. You know, I had applied to some schools locally and I wanted to go to UW-Madison and I didn't get in. And so I got waitlisted at first. And then I think I ended up not getting in off the waitlist. That's where I really wanted to go because my sister went there and it was not far and all this stuff. So I didn't get in there. I had been accepted up at the U and, I think St. Thomas or one of the other local schools, but I also had a really close friend who his older brother went to the University of New Hampshire. And then he went out there to visit, and he was a great friend of mine. So I thought, well, okay, I'll go out there with you. It sounds fun. We'll do a college visit. And I ended up going to the University of New Hampshire after that. It's an hour north of Boston.
You just thought you liked it?
I liked it. It was a big hockey school, and at that time, you know, like some 17, 18-year-olds, like hockey was my entire life. And so I thought, you know, if nothing else, I would have a lot of fun out there. And it was on the ocean. And it was just a little bit different. So like I mentioned before, you know, there were times when I was trying to like break this Rochester cycle and get out of town, right? And I think a lot of people have that desire at different points in their lives. But I decided to just take a chance. And it was a little bit of a leap. And my parents, you know, kind of thought, that it might, you know, I might go and never come back. But I went out there, stayed all 4 years. It was an awesome experience. I still have some of the best friends that I have are, you know, my college friends, who most of them live in Boston.
Yeah.
What
were you going for?
So I studied business, and English. So, you know, like in high school, I actually was really interested in journalism. So I was like always writing for the school paper, and I did that in college too. You know, I was never really that interested in it. Like, it wasn't like a passion, but it was something that I was interested in enough that I kept it around as long as I could. Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, I'm glad I did, because it, you know, in today's world with emails and other things, like we do a lot of like proposal writing and
a lot of communication.
Like if we're working on development, sometimes we're communicating with neighbors or people at the city, mm-hmm. and just having basic writing skills. You know, it sounds simple, but it's so valuable. And so I was glad that I did that during college. But the primary degree I got was just in business. And
was that just kind of like the broad, like you just weren't positive where you were going to go? So like having a business degree, or was there like I'm going?
No, I started to really gravitate towards anything entrepreneurial. And so... Okay. That was another reason I went to UNH, is they had a really well respected, they called it entrepreneurial venture creation. And they were one of the like country's, you know, leaders in how they taught sort of the entrepreneurial mindset. And so like one of the professors there, you know, is the type of guy that gets 50 speaking engagements a year. Mm-hmm. Just to talk about how startup businesses sort of like are the gasoline that fuels the economy. And he was a professor of mine in my degree for a couple classes. And like, I knew that it was a heavy entrepreneurial like school in their business side. I didn't really know that I was going to encounter that guy, who was just a really cool guy and very insightful. But I wanted to go for business. That was my primary goal. And so like science and, you know, some of the other like more general, anything I had to take like that, even some of the math classes that I had to take as part of my like general credits or whatever, it wasn't my thing at all.
I've always found it interesting, like, going to school for entrepreneurship, you know, like how, like it just seems weird that they teach that. Cause like usually it would be like, no, you're not going to go to school. You're going to go like figure this thing out.
Right.
You know, but
yeah,
teaching the mindset and the ideas, you know, that's definitely something.
Yeah. You know, I think, so if I think back to like how they structured it, there was certainly like a foundation to it, where they were going to teach you general accounting and finance and statistics and some different things that are really useful in any business setting.
Yep.
But like, where do they drive on the entrepreneurial thing? A lot of it is just in really like more engaging class structures, where no idea is off limits. They're going to be supportive to explore and like dive into anything that you might think of until you absolutely like have to stop and start over. And so really what it was just like this environment where let's create something. And the professors and the other students, you know, they were all like-minded. And so like I had an internship when I was out there.
While you were in school.
While I was in school with a company that was always pulling interns from our program.
Oh yeah.
And like, I went into this and the guy's like a software developer, and he's like, okay, so I just created, and like literally he's like, I just created this program that will allow you to like, let's say you typed in North Rock Real Estate, you could type in their URL to this search engine that he made, and it would tell you what search like SEO words they were paying to advertise. So you could look at your competitors and see what SEO targets they were using. Yeah. So that you could sort of like compete with them. And I mean, to this day, I know nothing about like SEO and the digital marketing sphere. Like it's just not something that ever gravitated towards me. But the reason that I mention it at all is just because that was the environment I was in, is they were just always trying to connect the students with these organizations where they were just like throwing, you know, shit up against the wall. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that company really ever took hold, or maybe it did, but you know, it was acquired or something. But it's just, you were in an environment where you were never going to be told you were dumb for thinking about something. You were going to be sort of like given credit for trying something new. That was just the mentality. So you came out of that school, or that particular wing of the school, because they had more traditional business avenues too, but just feeling a little bit more confident to try something new, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that was pretty valuable.
Yeah. So graduating from there, you know, what year was that? And then, you know, where'd you go next?
So I graduated in 2009. And right away, I kind of knew I wanted to come back. My wife and I we dated starting at Mayo High School.
Okay.
So she went to the University of Minnesota, and we were still dating through college. And so when college was over, I was kind of like, both of us were ready to be done with that long distance stuff. So I came back to Minneapolis, and I knew a little bit more about business. And at that point, and I had started to probably poke my dad a little bit more about, well, what is it that you do, and how could I potentially get into that if I wanted to? And he was always really, again, supportive of what I wanted to do. But he also had sort of the self-awareness to understand that he himself wasn't a very good like delegator or necessarily like teacher type of person. Right. And so he was like, Jeff, I think if you want to get into this business, you should go somewhere and learn the business.
Learn under somebody.
And then, you know, we'll just see where that goes, right? Because he is operated, you know, in sort of what I would say like small groups through his career with a couple partners that they've enjoyed really good partnerships with. But he never like had a big staff or was like cultivating young talent or anything like that. It was more of a deal by deal thing and kind of a sole proprietor type of thing. And so there wasn't like necessarily a company here that I could come work for or anything like that. So he said, if you like what I'm doing, I would recommend you go figure that out somewhere else and try to learn from another group. And the problem with that in 2009, and I really started looking in 2008, but the commercial recession for like commercial real estate really was a little bit behind the residential recession in 2008. So like 2008, 9, and 10 was a horrible time to be out looking for a job as a young guy who knows nothing, you know? And it just, you know, anywhere I applied, and I tried to leverage every relationship that I could, but I was not able to get any traction until I was at one point referred by my brother-in-law, who's now my partner, but I'll get to that.
Yeah.
But I was referred by my brother-in-law to a guy named Mike Zerbis, who was working for a small real estate development company in Edina. And he said, ask Mike what he thinks. So I reached out to Mike, and Mike said, you know, you could come work for us. And they had low staff. This was when I joined them, they might have had 4 or 5 total people in the company. So, you know, hiring one more is a big jump, right? It's like increasing their workforce by 20%, right? So, so he said, you could come work for us, but it'll be an unpaid internship. And so, you know, I was kind of thinking about that, like, you know, it doesn't feel very natural to spend 4 years in college thinking about how you're going to make money to go into an unpaid internship. But I decided to do it because in the conversations I had with Mike, I just was impressed by him, and I felt like I could learn something there and drive some value from it. And to be frank, I didn't have any better opportunities if I wanted to be in real estate.
Right.
So, you know, I ended up taking that unpaid internship.
That's in the cities?
And that's in the cities in Edina, yep. And I think it lasted unpaid for like 6 months or something like that. And then I ended up, you know, basically getting to a point. It wasn't like a tough conversation, but I think they knew and I knew that at some point I needed to get paid. But my first salary was, you know, like less than 30 grand a year or something like that. So it was like really incremental baby steps. And it was hard to, you know, see where it was all headed. I just knew that in that size of a company, and I was also continuously feeling like I could learn from Mike. But in that size of a company, the stuff that would land on my desk was sometimes higher level stuff, you know? And so I was put into positions where if I had joined one of the bigger brokerage shops, which you can, that would have been an opportunity. I could have joined like a 100% commission based bigger shop in Minneapolis and done that. But I would have been like one of many and forced to really like fight for any opportunity. And again, at, you know, in a smaller organization,
you're not really being mentored at that point. You're just kind of like,
no, I mean,
you can do. And
I think that is a viable route. It just didn't catch my eye as much. Like, and I think if you're going to get mentored in that situation, you're going to just have to really, really like be proactive. And some of those older brokers in those firms may have 10 guys like them nipping at their heels and, you know, it just, it could be tough. And so like in hindsight, I feel like I was very fortunate to join that company. It was small, which meant I was very close to the top. You know, they had some exciting stuff that they were working on that I got to see all aspects of it. You know, I wasn't like relegated to the entry level stuff. I was in all the meetings and I didn't say much for a long time and I had a lot to learn from, but yeah, it just slowly kind of turned into the type of thing where as I would learn more, I would become more integral to what we were doing.
Did it get more exciting? Like the more you learn, the more deals you're a part of, like, did you just get more and more excited and like, okay, this is cool?
Yeah. I mean, every step in the process felt like a major win and success. Right. And so like getting a salary, it didn't even really matter what the number was, but like that felt awesome. And even stepping back, when I was an unpaid intern, they gave me a cell phone. That's the one thing they gave me. And so I was like, sweet, I got my own cell phone. Nice. Like that my parents aren't paying for, you know. Granted, at the time my parents were still paying my rent, but like, you know, I'm trying to like figure it out, right? Because you don't know a lot. You go to college and I don't know, do you know a lot at that point? Not really. Like
you get a foundation, but it's doing it and learning the real world experience is.
Yeah. I think in college you really learn a lot about yourself and like what you're capable of and how you should act in certain situations. You know, you learn how to work hard, hopefully. Sometimes you learn how to party hard or whatever. But like if you look at college as an opportunity to sort of shape the type of person you want to be, and that can include a lot of fun, but just creating some work ethic and a general direction, you can survive, I think, in the real world a long time with that. And then eventually you'll figure out where your real passion is. I don't know. You know, for me, I was lucky enough that I kind of picked right. Like I ended up in a field that I really enjoy, but I don't know that that was necessarily all college. In college, it was just more about, you know, learning what works for me as a person in terms of like study habits, you know, not procrastinating, taking care of business, like that kind of thing. But
so at the company, how long were you there before?
So, so I started in 2009 and we founded North Rock in 2012. And so, okay. Really, like when I got there, Mike had already started. So Mike Zerbis is who I co-founded North Rock with in 2012. And he's this, you know, sort of mentor to me, mm-hmm. That I'm describing. But when we were working at that company, he was already starting to attract some good relationships. And some of the relationships that the company had were from the owner who had already had a 30-year career in real estate. And then some of them were sort of like being handed over to us. And then some of these relationships we were cultivating on our own.
Yep.
When we got to 2012, the start of 2012, we were starting to hit our stride as a company, generating pretty consistent revenues and understanding the different avenues where we would make money. You know, we were billed as a development company, but we never built a project, or there was one development while I was there. And so we were really like discovering that we weren't as much of a development company. We were more of a brokerage and management company. And I was getting to the point where I was pretty integral in those avenues.
Right.
And Mike was leading everything. And so, when it got to 2012, by that time, our boss, he had made some investments in businesses outside of real estate that had really started to work out well for him. And so with that, he started to pay a little bit less and less attention. And by the time we got to 2012, it was sort of like this small company that was the company we joined was just naturally becoming a company that made more sense for Mike and I to run. I mean, again, we had some relationships from the owner.
Yep.
He wasn't even that interested in those relationships anymore. And then we were cultivating our own and building some brand recognition, which, you know, in real estate is mostly either Jeff Brown, Mike Zerbis. You know, it's not
it's who you know. And
It's like we are the brand, right? So we got to the point where it just kind of made sense for us to split off and do our own thing, not worry about our next like review period for a salary. You know, we were generating 100% of the revenue for the company, mm-hmm. you know? And so, and it was a very like friendly party and it made sense on all sides, but we were able to start North Rock and take some of those relationships and continue to work with them and grow them. And that was in 2012. You know, it was a big leap because all of a sudden the paycheck goes away and it's still a, you know, eat what you kill type of business. And so you never know how that's going to work out. But,
so 2012, you guys found that together. You're still in the cities at that point.
Yep.
Kind of fast forward. Cause I know, was there a point where it's like, you know, you started really just catching on? Did something big happen? Was there, you know, like take us to even like present day now?
Yeah. So 2012 through 2014, we were still predominantly a brokerage and management company, mm-hmm. but Mike and I both had always wanted to do development. That's why we were with the company, or that's why Mike joined the company that I first got the unpaid internship with. And that's why I went there too, is because I wanted to be a part of development. And it didn't pan out there, but we learned a little bit and we got connected with some people where we were sort of surrounded by development, just not doing it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's this thing that we've always like talked about and we still talk about it, where things happen up in the Twin Cities and then maybe like 5 years later they happen in Rochester. So Mike was also born and raised in Rochester. He went to Lourdes. So we were kind of conscious of that. And we had some, we never like got lazy on our relationships down here. We were always paying attention down here. But we had been kind of in contact with some people who were developing senior housing. And we thought, well, I wonder what Rochester has for senior housing. And it was really that simple. And it even goes back to like Mike and I observing our grandparents trying to land in senior housing, like, but first being on a year-long wait list.
Oh, wow.
So you asked me earlier about like, how do you identify opportunity? Sometimes it's right there in front of you. And like, so we kind of said, well, gosh, why not Rochester? You know, both of our grandparents are on wait lists. And the from what we can tell, the last project that was built was, I think at the time it was Homestead in 2004. And so again, this is 2014. And so we said, let's try and do that. And we said, well, how the hell do we do that? You know? Mm-hmm. So we reached out to my dad, and this is kind of where it comes back to, like, you know, we never intentionally worked with my, or initially started my career with the intention of coming back or doing anything like that. But when we talked to him about it, he's like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Let's hustle on this.
Right.
So Mike and I ended up locating a site, which is now the Waters on Mailwood. So we ended up, you know, a lot of in between, but we ended up locating the site off 16th Street. We worked with Nick Pompain and his dad, mm-hmm. who were representing the sellers. So we bought the land from them. And, you know, my dad sort of led the process, but made us pay attention and do a lot of the work along the way, which we were thrilled to do. I mean, absolutely. It was like the best.
This is stuff that you're trying to learn.
Oh, yeah. And it was like going to college all over again. The nerve-wracking thing about it, and like Mike and I, we took pictures of $1,000 market study. So one of the things you do with some of these developments is you like you hire markets experts to like look at the demographics and see like, is your project going to be viable? And you might need that for a bank or an investor to feel comfortable with putting money into the project. And so this was $1,000 check that we had to write to get that going. And we didn't know if it was going to turn into a real project. The market study could come back and be really negative. But we took pictures of that check, and because we were like, this is kind of cool. We're gambling here, right? Like it's hopefully better than gambling, but we're taking a shot. And so that project ended up, and it's a huge project. I mean, it's 300,000 square feet, 175 units, really, really nice. And that was our first development project. And, you know, it required as lengthy of a city process as the city has to offer. It required, you know, raising a significant amount of money, both from a local lender and from an institutional equity partner in Chicago. And like none of this stuff are things that we would have thought we were capable of pulling off because we'd never done it before. But, you know, like we had my dad in the room who had confidence. He had some gray hair too. So like sitting in meetings, people could look at him. I was 27 at the time or 26. And so, you know, I've always felt way too young. I could not wait to get to 30, you know? But we just kind of continued to press forward and everyone took us seriously. It was just a good project. And so the lesson learned was just that, you know, there's money out there for good projects. You just have to be able to identify them. Yep. And we were fortunate that we had identified like a legitimately good project. And so, but to build it, that was basically 2014 to 2015. It was a 16-month build. And I was down here almost I was down here every week for sure. Probably once or twice a week. Mike was too. And we, through that, we started to see more opportunities in Rochester. And so then my wife and I got pregnant with our first child. And we were living in a condo, and we were deciding, well, and this is up in St. Louis Park, do we want to lay our roots down up here? Or do we want to bet that, like, we're going to continue to be busy in Rochester? And so we ended up moving back down here. Kind of at that point, we were down here all the time anyways. We already had sort of started to lay the groundwork for the development across the street from the Waters, which is where B-Dubs and Home 2 Suites and Panera Bread and Red 44 are.
Yep.
That was a development we led as well. And so we started to like see that the future had a lot of work for us down here.
Right.
And with our baby and having to buy a house, that sort of pushed us down here. So
it's easier when it's just you and your wife. But when you're starting to raise a family, you want more of a.
Yeah, the hardest part about it, to be honest, was just, you know, Mike had done so much for me to get to where I was. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how he would look at it with me moving down here.
Oh, right.
You know, because at the time we shared an office together, and there's a lot of value in being right there sitting next to each other on a daily basis. You know, you can collaborate, you can, you know, lean on each other for, you know, to support when bandwidth is low on one side of the wall or the other. And, so it was kind of a leap of faith in that me moving down to Rochester was going to work, and our partnership was going to remain as strong. But you know, here we are in 2021, and we've just continued to kind of grow, and it's worked really well. It's kind of nice to be able to tell people we're in both markets, and mm-hmm. it sort of helps with that Rochester connection that I talked about, where, you know, great ideas often happen in the cities and then make their way down here
Absolutely.
A few years later. So,
no, I like that. So what was kind of like the, you know, obviously there's a lot of struggles that can happen, you know, in a journey. Was there any like big hurdles or like things that just in the whole history of North Rock where it was like, man, like this sucks, or this is a big thing that we got to get over? And like, did you learn something from that?
You know, there's always, so I feel like since we did the Waters on Mayowood, mm-hmm. we've had this run of doing large scale developments in town, and each one of those projects, and this is just the nature of the business, but each one of those projects has had moments where, you know, it just seems overwhelming. Mm. And that could be like, we've had projects where we'll spend a year of our lives putting these things together, which is a ton of unpaid hours, probably, you know, for sure 5 figures of expense, and oftentimes 6 figures of expense in what we call pre-development, where you're speccing costs for civil engineers, architects, and other consultants just to see if hopefully there's a project there. Mm-hmm. You know, we do that all pretty calculated so that we're not just, you know, throwing that money down the drain, but it's really nerve-wracking. And like, we've had projects where we've done that. We've invested a year and a bunch of money in trying to get a project off the ground, and then we go and we get a bid from our general contractor and it's $1 million too high. Mm. Like, those days are really, really hard. You know, you're sort of like, I just wasted a bunch of time and money trying to pursue this. B, that project, you know, was going to basically pay my, you know, we don't get salaries, but that was going to compensate us for the next year or so. And so you have to just kind of go back to the drawing board. And,
wow.
You know, that's probably happened to us one time in a significant way, where when we went back to the drawing board, it actually sort of changed the nature of what we were doing. And it was quite a significant deal. But in all of those situations, and development is like that, where you have these days that are, it seems like the issue is insurmountable. Like, we've had earthwork issues. So you're digging down deep to build these parking structures, mm-hmm. and then you're putting footings on top of it. Like, you need your soils to be sound. And unfortunately, in this area, you deal with a lot of, like, we call it goose crap. Like, it's just not, there's not always great soils, and you don't know. We do a lot of like drilling and stuff to see what we think we're going to encounter, right. But sometimes it's worse than it is. And so you're just faced with these issues that are really challenging to overcome. But, you know,
and each project has their own.
Each project has their own. And I'm getting a little bit more immune to those surprises because I've kind of been through it now a number of times.
Right.
But development is a game that really, really takes perseverance. And like, if you can't roll with the punches and sort of keep your head up and keep your mind clear to where you can navigate with a little creativity, or maybe have to do something a little different or whatever, but if you can't navigate around the issues, you're not going to get to the finish line, and it's going to be hard for you to you know, achieve successful outcomes at the end. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, Northrock itself has had a really like good run where I can't say there's really any extended period of time where I haven't thoroughly enjoyed and been really happy with the way things have gone. But there's been moments in each project or, you know, along the way that have really tested us. And it's tested our ability to just persevere, keep our head, like keep your eye on the prize and just find a way, you know, like figure out how the problem can be solved and then go work on executing, you know, that solution. And there's typically a way to do it, you know, and we've been blessed to have great partners and advisors and other people to help us, you know, do that. It's not like, it's not just one, two or three of us, coming up with ways to get these things done. But,
that's something cool that I think just development is interesting with is like you are kind of putting like a group of people together and, you know, usually they've been successful in different ways and stuff like that. So you can play off each other's strengths.
Yeah.
So I've always thought that was a cool thing. What keeps you motivated? I mean, you guys have been hustling, you're growing quick. What gets you excited and keeps you motivated?
Yeah, it's a good question. Because like, you know, you hear the term like, sometimes things can be sort of like thankless or anticlimactic, right? Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned before, like we'll spend years on some of these projects before they turn into a real deal. Because this is so true. And people sometimes probably think I'm embellishing, but none of these projects are real until the day really that you open for business. I mean, closing is a massive milestone because then you have the money to build the project. But until you actually get the thing open, it is not a real deal. And there is a ton of risk and exposure hanging out there. So there's these different milestones where you're going through the project and you feel like you should be celebrating. So like we get to the closing table and we've raised all this money to build a project and you're like, yes, we've closed, but now we got to build
it. There's a ton of work.
You know? And so then we go and we build it and you're like, yes, we've built it. Well, now you got to open the project and it's got to work and it's got to be able to make the payments that, you know, the investors and your lenders have sort of expected through the mm-hmm. process. And so, so when you go from that to where, like, I'll use our Home 2 Suites as an example, that project over near the mall, right across the street from the Waters.
Yep.
It's been successful and we finally got through like some of those different milestones where it's like, okay, we got the financing closed. Okay. We built it. Okay. We're a year and a half in and it's working. It's like we're meeting or exceeding our expectations. Right. Well, then you're kind of like, well, what's next? And it's like this big gulp and you have to figure something else out. And So, I mean, we're sort of like, I know the question is what motivates you and, you know, we're motivated to do well financially. We're motivated to, you know, just stay productive and have things to work on. But the reason that we don't necessarily align ourselves to one asset class or another, and we're not like just hotel guys, or we're not just office guys or whatever, is because we really like to serve the needs that we see in the community. And so like, you know, the hotel projects, well, we're doing it because we think it serves a certain demand that's out there. You know, the office projects that we just built with Smith Schaefer, you know, kind of anchoring, well, they had a need and we had a way to solve it. And so like, that is really exciting to be able to like, listen to what situation they're in and understand where they want to go and then come up with a plan that attacks that head on.
Yep.
That's like really motivating because then when you get to the end, it's like, you know, there is probably that anticlimactic aspect to it where now it's just their office and they're just living in it and they're, you know, it's just a building. Right. Mm-hmm. But you've also, like, the journey is so cool, and you've solved this huge issue that they had and put them in a good position for their business. And that's really motivating. And that gets me excited about the next group that comes to me and says, hey, you know, my real estate's not really working with my business plan. Mm-hmm. How can you help me figure that out? You know, and hopefully there's some money to be made. Hopefully it's a cool project that's really fun to work on. But like solving those issues for business owners or solving market demand for the city of Rochester, like that's exciting. You know, it's just fun to be a part of.
So I think it allows you too to like take pride in what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, that you're making a difference.
Yeah. And like real estate at its core is a really fun investment vehicle because of that. You know, so a lot of our developments, we have investors who are local, you know, business owners, local docs, local whoever, you know, and they just want to put a little bit of money into real estate, A, because it's a diversification from the stock market or any other investments that they have. But like B, and I think this is maybe even the more attractive thing, they can drive by it. You know, they can see it. They can say, I own a piece of that, you know, and that's fun. And so especially in a community like Rochester where we've got a lot going for us. I mean, we should be so thankful to have the engine that we have in the Mayo Clinic and the business community. Like you and I sitting here, and you know this as well as I do, it's so supportive of anyone who's out there hustling. You know, if you're willing to get out there and take a chance, there's going to be people there that will help lift you up.
Absolutely.
And so to be a part of that in this market is just really fun. And I think, like for our investors and even us on our projects, it's investing in real estate's a way to do that, because you might be investing in the home for someone's business or, you know, the hotel that the patients for the Mayo Clinic stay in, you know, things like that.
I like it. So where do you see the future of the company going? You know, is it just even just like the next 5 years, like what does that look like for North Rock? What are you going to get into more of? What are you going to try to just stay consistent with? You know, what are your kind of goals for the company?
You know, it's a good question. I don't have like a, well, here's A, B, and C, but we are, you know, trying to fill our pipeline with some development projects right now in areas that we think are, you know, likely to be good investment spaces in Rochester for the next few years. And so we're right now working on building out that pipeline. And what that means is we're identifying different, you know, pieces of land or maybe there's structures that already exist that could be repurposed or something like that. And we're working on either acquiring or, you know, putting the wheels in motion so that we can have control of those projects into the future. Yep. North Rock will be involved in housing projects in the next few years. Continued office and retail. I mean, that's really no different than the last 5 years, but we see greater opportunity in those spheres. We might take some chances in different asset classes, like a little bit more industrial type stuff that we've not necessarily been involved in the past. We've got a project that we're kind of working on right now that would be in a little bit of a different sphere like that. And then we're really working on growing our property management business too. And the reason we're doing that is because we've started either for our clients or things that, you know, North Rock is sort of a partner in, we've started to accumulate a nice little portfolio of commercial properties that we manage on behalf of these entities. And we have now like a foundation and systems in place where we do that very, very well. Mm-hmm. And we like that business because it's like all the stuff that I talked about with development and brokerage is really spotty income too. I mean, when you're doing brokerage deals, like you might get a paycheck for, you know, 15 grand on one day and then not see one for 3 months. So it's really unpredictable. And property management is a little bit more consistent. It's like it's almost like a subscription business to the point that you can predict your cash flow. And so we want to build that to sort of help us just strengthen the foundation of the company, but also to just continue to connect us with more and more business owners. Cause like our management portfolio today has, I think, this is probably give or take, but like 95 tenants. Mm-hmm. And those are all business owners that we interact with, you know, on a monthly basis for sure, if not more often. And again, like,
and it's really supplemental to what you guys are already doing.
Yeah, it's all, it helps us be vertically integrated, right? So if we can continue to grow out all of these platforms with management being sort of one of the foundational elements, it just, it's sort of, you know, it'll help feed the entire enterprise. But like me personally, you know, I guess I haven't done a great job in, not necessarily, like I mentioned earlier, my dad never really surrounded himself with a ton of staff. Like, mm-hmm. I think in the next few years, we would like to see ourselves add a couple key people who can help us do some of the day-to-day work so that we're not necessarily doing some of the more, like, it's not always administrative, but, you know, I want to be focused on finding projects and working with customers and so I think we could probably facilitate more growth in the company at this point. Like, we've hit a point where we could add a couple people who are skilled and motivated and who will work hard in key spots in our company, and they could really help us grow. So that'll be something we'll be thinking a lot about too.
So for people that are interested in development, where would they start?
The simplest answer is, you know, find the piece of land, budget out what it's going to cost to build on it, and then, you know, go to the bank and get the money, and then hire a good contractor who can execute the process. But I think the way that your question is coming to me, like, I get this question a lot from business owners, mm-hmm. and they're like, I want to build my next building, or,
I mean, we've even thought about that. Like,
yeah.
So we're in an office, we need to expand. Do we try to, you know, lease for 3 to 5 years, or do we look at building, or, you know, how does that work?
And so, like, if you were having this conversation with me in my conference room or something like that, what I would tell you is, you know, try to keep in mind that there's two perspectives that you're really talking about in that scenario. One, you're, you know, MediaCorp's owner, and you have an obligation to, like, make the best decision that you can for the business, right? The other is you're becoming a real estate investor. Mm. And you can almost, if you can, I think you'll do best in both boxes if you keep those two people separate, even though they're both you, right? Because MediaCorp is going to want cheap rent, right? That's going to mean that you're going to go buy the cheapest piece of land and build the cheapest building in order to accomplish that, right? But throwing that, the kind of money that it takes even in cheaper scenarios towards a development might not be the right thing for the landlord side of Josh at that point. Because now you're investing in a piece of property that maybe isn't going to appreciate as much, or, you know, doesn't have leftover utility. If MediaCorp ever leaves it, well, then who's going to occupy it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's another thing. Like, if MediaCorp is going to build out a 10,000 square foot production studio, but then MediaCorp goes away, which the business owner, you know, doesn't think is going to happen, but then you put on your real estate investor hat, Josh, who's happens if they go away? Space. Who's going to move into it? So it's really important to, like, understand that there are two hats to be worn in that situation and make sure that you're really being honest with yourself about each one of them. And, you know, the simplest way to think about it, if you're a business owner thinking about development, is to think about what is the business plan of my organization, and what real estate will serve that business plan's objectives. Okay. Right. And then once you've understood that, you go over to the real estate side of your brain and you think, is there a location out there where I can create this and make it a sound real estate investment. In other words, you know, let's say Josh answers that question, you know, MediaCorp Josh answers that question and then goes over to Landlord Josh. And it's like, oh, all Josh from MediaCorp needs is a generic 10,000 square foot box that's wide open and he wants it in a great location. Well, that'd be a good real estate investment because, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people could use that. There will be demand for it. And yep. the more demand there is, the more I can charge, you know? And if you're just looking at it from an investment standpoint, you know,
Yeah, I was going to ask that too. Like,
let's
say you just got a handful of money and you're like, I don't want to do stocks. I don't want to put it in retirement. Like, but I want to invest yep. it. And you know, I've heard real estate is a good investment. So like, you know,
yeah. So even in that scenario, I think, you know, it's really smart to align yourselves either with a broker or a developer and maybe an accountant or just like surround yourself with some people who have seen how the sausage is made mm-hmm. in the past and have them help you facilitate it. And, you know, there's a lot of options in Rochester for groups that do that. North yeah. Rock is one of them. But when you go to someone, have an understanding of, you know, how much capital you want to deploy, you know, what your anticipated returns might be. And a experienced broker or developer in this market should be able to help you understand what kinds of opportunities can achieve those goals. Mm-hmm. You know, at face level, real estate is, you know, kind of, if you look at like the history, the last 50 years, like it's been, you know, Rochester has not let many people down. It's been a great place to invest. Asset prices have gone way up. There's been continual growth from Mayo, which has pushed demand through like the whole community and all sectors of real estate and other, you know, yep. even business investment. But you know, you want to invest. Here's the number one rule I would tell someone if they're just purely investing: invest an amount of money, a particular amount of money that you can sort of stand to be patient around.
Right.
Because in Rochester, like if you have the ability to control the timing of any transaction and wade through a bad period in the economy or something like that, over time you will do well here. But if you invest so much money that you put yourself into a bind and you need to liquidate that capital because a recession hit and you can't withstand that money being tied up in mm-hmm. a building and then you have to sell, that's where you're going to really get
so like pinched. money that you can live without, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, certainly you could invest that. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
I would recommend that because I'm, you know, as much risk as I've taken, I like to advise people on a path that I think is sustainable and at least semi-conservative. You know, certainly if you want to scale up and get rich faster, you're going to have to take a little bit more risk right. and maybe deploy a little bit more capital. But I think it's important to understand that real estate is not as liquid as the stock market. You know, you can't just press a button and liquidate your shares tomorrow if you sense that things are going south. I mean,
Jeff, we need to sell the hotel.
Yeah. Well, like the pandemic, you right. know, that threw us a curveball that we didn't think we were going to deal with. But thankfully, in our underwriting and our formation of that deal structure, we were, we had sort of, set ourselves up to weather that. Okay. And we did, but, I think it's important on the outset to like know how to look at things. And so as much as it is fun to look at what your potential upside might be, you have to understand the downside as well, and then plan for it. And again, work with people who have done it before and who know the different like components of a good deal. Mm-hmm. And I think you can jump in. You know, the market right now is pretty competitive. Interest rates are still low. And so prices are up and, you know, with inflation, people like to get their money into assets. And, so
yeah,
it can be challenging. It can take time, but again, perseverance and just sticking with it and being patient for the right opportunity so that you don't just like throw your wad at the first deal that comes across your table. But
no, I like that. So advice for, you know, a lot of listeners are just in the business or entrepreneurial space. And we kind of talked about the investing side there. If someone wanted to literally do what you do and be, you know, a developer, start that development company, and they're younger, you know, or wherever they are in their career, but they're wanting to do that, where would you kind of guide that person to learn the industry?
Well, I think
is it college or is it?
I think getting a college degree is important for just, again, learning about yourself, right? Like, and you sort of have to go into it with this sort of mindset. Like, I need to figure out like how I'm going to get into a routine. Like, I used to go to the library to study. I couldn't study in my room, right? It's kind of like today. Like, I have to be at the office to do work. You know, I worked from home a little bit during the pandemic, and that was really hard for me because I had the distractions of my three young kids and the TV and all that kind of stuff. So you kind of have to like learn about yourself. Where am I most productive? How do I do my best thinking? What types of people do I surround myself with? Like, I think there's a lot of coming of age value in college with that. In my industry specifically, I'm not sure that there's going to be, and there are some like college programs that are starting to focus in real estate. Like, I think I didn't go to one, but I think they would be worth investigating. But I think on the job training is going to be as valuable as anything, right? And I'm sure you've seen that. Like, you just don't experience, you can't recreate these things in sort of a school environment that will happen during the course of actually running a business and getting involved in these projects. So I think going to college is important, learn a little bit about yourself, but, you know, I wouldn't discourage anyone from just trying to get underneath the wing of someone like I did with Mike. I mean, he just said, well, I mean, we could probably use you if you'd come in unpaid, right? And that was uncomfortable, but I'm so thankful that I did that. And I think Mike is too, because he and I've established this great partnership now that's almost 10 years in the making. And, you know, I learned a lot from him. And so I think you got to try to find some opportunity where you can be mentored a little bit and work with someone who is doing the things that you want to do. The other thing about real estate and development in particular is you have to get connected to people. You right. have to like...
A lot of like relationships.
Relationships, like yep. Stuff. And yeah. So like at its core, that could mean, you know, like your traditional networking, which like I hated that stuff, like the social hours and whatnot, because it's kind of like, oh, what are you up to? You know, and it's uncomfortable, right? Yeah. Like it's, you know, everyone's there to try and, it's very honorable. Like I have a ton of respect for that process because it was a part of my early career, but you have to do that because if people don't know who you are and what you're up to, then they're never going to think of you when they think, hey, my dental building isn't working for me anymore. I need a new one.
Yeah.
Right. You want people to know what you've been up to. So you gotta, you know, I think you gotta surround yourself with people who can teach you. And then you've gotta like continuously surround yourself with people who can observe what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, brokerage is a great place to start because that sort of forces you to meet people. You know, you'll be very hungry because it's a commission-based world. And like, you know, I hit the phones on cold calls early on in my career, and you have to do some of that stuff that is not stuff that I loved doing, but you learn from it and you get connected to people. And for every fail or for every, you know, 10 failures, that one success feels pretty darn good. And it kind of teaches you about yourself. So, you know, I don't know. It's, you just got to kind of jump in.
Learn by doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I like the networking thing. I always thought that there was like an age barrier that you'd even, you know, I had to go and just like get past.
Right.
You know.
You know, the other thing is like I'm effectively in a sales role. I have to convince people to build the new buildings, and I have to if I'm hired as a broker, I'm selling real estate, right? You are very good at outlining what you do, what it costs, and why it's valuable. And like, I have admired you for doing that, because in the process of us buying our video from MediaCorp, I had no idea what that market was. I didn't know what it would cost to produce a video of that quality. What I knew was that I liked what I had seen from other places. And so, you know, that's probably similar to people diving into real estate. They're not quite sure how to look at the pricing model or really all of the steps along the way that are going to help them get to where they want to go. But if you can learn how to cleanly outline, like, you know, here's what we're going to do, here's what it costs, and here's why it's valuable for you. I mean, that will help you sell. And I think you got to ask for sales. You got to do all this stuff that seems uncomfortable, but really, like, true business owners, I think when they hear that and it's cut to the chase, this is what it is.
Yep.
They respect that. And like, when you and I had that conversation, I'm thinking to myself, you know, okay, I understand where he's coming from and I believe him. I think I'm going to get value out of this, you know, X dollars that we're spending on this video, you know? So you got to like learn how to communicate that way. Yeah. And then when you have these conversations with people, especially if you have a little bit of a reputation built up, they'll trust you and they'll say, you know what, I will work with you.
What I learned really early on was like dealing with business owners is, first of all, just way different than B2C.
Yeah.
And there's no gimmick or tactic or something that these people haven't heard or seen or already come across.
Did you?
And like, you can't, I can't walk in and bullshit you. Like, you're going to see right through it.
Right.
So much of it is just.
Well, and most people don't have time to talk for too long.
Right.
About it, right.
It's just like, be genuine, be real about what you're doing, be passionate about it, and like build a relationship.
So, what was the first year of your sales career like versus the last 12 months, let's say?
Oh, it's, I mean, at the beginning, it was all about reputation. Like, I got to build a name for the company. And a lot of it was, you know, you're at the beginning, your pricing's cheaper, your quality's cheaper. You know, it's just,
yeah,
like, you're just a lot smaller, to where now I feel like we have so much backing in what we've done and so much experience what we've learned, where I can go into any company now and confidently go, okay, let's chat. Okay, now this is what I think you should do, and I think this is how it's going to benefit you, and this is how I would use it.
Yeah.
And I can confidently do that, and they can see that. They can go,
yeah,
no, I trust you.
Well, and I'm sure, like, looking at the dollars and cents, when you were in your first year of selling, everyone was like, well, would you do it for $500 less?
Yeah.
And I'm sure there was a few times where he said, sure, you know,
Will. If you're like really wanting to work with someone,
right?
There was a little bit of that. You know, I never really believed in like the do it for free, you know, method where a lot of filmmakers do at the beginning to build like their reel.
Sure.
You know, I was like, you're doing work, you get paid for it, you know, even if it's discounted.
And I think, you know, early on in our career, like, we always called it like a commissionectomy or something like that.
Yeah.
People were, they knew we were hungry.
Right.
Right. And they could see it. Like, and we probably wore that on our sleeves.
Yeah.
And so they're saying, well, would you do it for this or would you do it? And it's like, sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think over time, and this is, it takes time and it takes some experience to get to this point, but you start to understand your own value in these situations, and you're able to sort of come back with that and say, you know, here's what we're really talking about here. Like, there's this process.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be executing steps A through Z along the way. And at the end of it, the value you're going to derive from it is this. And so, you know, our compensation, it's market, it's fair, and quite frankly, it's where it needs to be. And you can like be confident, and you can, and then the business owner, like at this point in my career, on the other end of it, they're like, they respect that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want someone who's confident that they're going to provide value, right? If
and
so you have to learn that somewhere if you're going to get into this business. And I think the only way to do it is to like dive in, and that's where brokerage is a great place to start, because it forces you to kind of cut your teeth on the sales process.
Yeah. I mean, we learned that it's not like, even now I'm like, the value's not really in the video itself. It's what the video can do.
Yeah.
You know, it's right. like, I'm not out here to go, Jeff, here's a pretty video that like you're going to think is sick. It's right. like, Jeff, we can do something and fix a need here. And this is just going to be the driving force of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, and video is a great medium. I mean, we have been trying to explain to people what we do for a long time. And I think our video with you helped with that.
Yep. Just get to show them.
Yep.
Well, sweet. Jeff, it's been awesome having you on today.
Thanks, Josh.
This is our longest one yet. We've been rolling a good amount, like hour 15 or something like that.
All right.
Thank you to the listeners. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys on the next one. Yeah.
Thanks, Josh.
Yeah.
It's fun. Good.